afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Monday edition of the Dark to Light podcast with Beans. It was a crazy weekend. Friday was a crazy show. A lot of things happened over the weekend. However, I also spent, like I said I was going to, some time over the weekend to get together an outline for you, getting you guys up to speed with the machinations of the Missouri v. Biden case. It's complicated, but not. I would recommend if you're audio podcast listeners, you go down to your show notes right now and click the first link in the show notes. If you're watching on the live stream, you're not going to need that. Daughter of the Sun says, hi, Tracy. First time joining you live. Wish I had found you sooner. Been listening on Spotify for a few weeks. Well, God bless and thank you. I'm so glad you're here. So glad you're here. It's good to have new people. So we're going to go through a timeline of the case that now everybody is talking about. And if you haven't heard what it is, the name of the case is Missouri v. Biden. And when this case was first filed and I read the complaint, I said, this is going to be a banger for sure. This is probably the most important civil liberties case in our lifetimes. And I started in on it immediately. Case was filed May 5th of 2022. So we're approximately 21 months in. We've got a couple more months before it's 2 years old. And what I'm looking at on screen right now, which I'm going to make full screen here for you guys. You might not see a lot of me, but you'll hear me. This is, if you're following along on the audio show, you'll see this. This is the court listener docket. What this does is it takes from PACER. PACER is the public repository of federal lawsuits. This hefty little 501c3 free law project created this mechanism to copy a docket from one place to here so that people could have access to these things without having to pay for them. So I have a plugin. Everybody who uses this has a plugin if they're wanting to contribute. They install it, and then when they go to PACER and buy the documents off of PACER, which gets insanely expensive, I can tell you from personal experience. It populates the court listener docket here with the actual documents so that anybody can access them once one person pays for them. So here we are. This case was filed on May 5th of 2022. And as you can see, there are approximately, there's like 4 or 5 pages of this. Goes down. A lot of people don't know how to read these things because they're legalese and they're complicated. But I'm going to go through this for you as best I can. We'll get through whatever we can get through, and then we'll pick it up on Wednesday, wherever we leave off. But this is every decision and everything that's been filed and all the things that have happened in this case from the very get. And there are 3 pages of this, I believe. Let's go down to the bottom. Yeah, 3 pages of this. Documents and filings and pleadings. I have read every single one. Let's start with the complaint. Here it is. The states of Missouri and the state of Louisiana sue Biden, Psaki, Murthy, Becerra, the Department of HHS, Fauci, the NSA, the NIAID, the CDC, Mayorkas, the Department of Homeland Security, Jen Easterly in her official capacity, all in their official capacity, CISA, and Nina Jankowicz, who was the Disinformation Governance Board director. So remember, this was filed in 2022. It starts, in 1783, George Washington warned that if freedom of speech may be taken away, then dumb and silent we may be led like sheep to the slaughter. The freedom of speech in the United States now faces one of its greatest assaults by federal government officials in the nation's history. A private entity, this is very important, a private entity violates the First Amendment if the government coerces or induces it to take action the government itself would not be permitted to do, such as censor expression of a lawful viewpoint. The government cannot accomplish through threats of abuse through threats of adverse government action, what the Constitution prohibits it from doing directly. This case is about free speech. This case is about the government threatening or coercing private companies to censor on its behalf, at its whim, because it doesn't like what you have to say. And the case hinges around several subsets of topics that the government was censoring on social media by threatening or coercing social media companies to do its bidding, such as the Hunter Biden laptop, such as the Great Barrington Declaration, such as COVID vaccinations, such as COVID masking policy, such as moving on, it turned into abortion, it turned into the withdrawal from Afghanistan, it turned into 2020 election stuff. Moved on and on. The government was working, or is working, with social media companies to censor Americans' speech. They are threatening and coercing social media companies to do it or else. And that is what this case started out addressing. So they filed this complaint. It was literally the states of Missouri and the states of Louisiana. Now, just the Jeff Landry was the AG of Louisiana, and Liz Merle was the solicitor, the main lawyer for the AG. That's changed now throughout the course of this, where Jeff Landry is now the governor of Louisiana, and Liz Merle is the AG of Louisiana. God bless you, Louisiana. God bless you. And Missouri has changed up a bit too. So they file this. And the defendants, the government, well, let me hold on. They file it and they ask the judge to grant them expedited discovery and for a temporary injunction to halt the government from discussing any of this with social media companies as the case continues until it's, and until it's decided. So they ask the judge to say, you know what, government, you need to provide X amount of documents to Louisiana and Missouri. You need to provide all these documents to Louisiana and Missouri, and we're going to also temporarily bar you from any of these discussions with social media companies that you would normally have. You're not going to be allowed to have them anymore. So the government, that's what the plaintiffs asked this judge, Terry Doty, in Louisiana to do. Then, of course, the government comes in and they respond to the state's motion for that expedited discovery that they want. And of course, they file this on July 1st, so 2 months later, with a gazillion pages of authorities. And they say, for years, government officials on both sides of the political aisle have debated the role that social media companies play in political and popular discourse. Both Democrats and Republicans have commented on those companies' content moderation policies, and both Democrats and Republicans have also questioned whether those companies should continue to enjoy statutory protections against tort liability. The reason why they bring that up is because in the complaint, it is rightfully argued that the government is holding social media companies hostage to Section 230. They are basically threatening social media companies. If you don't do as we say in regards to what we determine is mis, dis, and malinformation, then we'll just come after your Section 230 protection. And maybe we'll pass some legislation breaking up our perceived monopoly that you guys have. They were threatening social media companies with action if they did not listen to what they said. And the government is brazen in all of their responses. Brazen. They say the plaintiff states, Missouri and Louisiana, now ask this court to constitutionalize this political debate by issuing two extraordinary orders. Now, note, they call the orders extraordinary because they are. First, the states request a sweeping preliminary injunction that would have the perverse effect of suppressing public official speech on matters of public concern. From the beginning, the government has argued that if the judge were to institute this temporary injunction, it would be a violation of the government's free speech. They have consistently misrepresented what the plaintiffs are asking for by making a ridiculous claim that this injunction would bar them from posting on social media. It's utterly insane. They just figure, let's lie about this and keep the lie going as long as we can. But that's it in a nutshell. That's what they've argued in a nutshell. Second, and the topic of the present motion, the states ask this court to stray from the ordinary course of civil litigation provided by the federal rules of civil procedure by immediately requiring defendants to respond to an unspecified number of interrogatories and document requests and potentially prepare for depositions on a compressed timeline. Then they go on to talk about how other individuals have sued the government for the same thing and lost. And then they go to their next issue that they try to raise here, standing. Whether or not the states of Missouri and Louisiana even have the standing to sue them about this. And they say, even if jurisdictional hurdles could be surmounted, discovery wouldn't be permitted here. The states assert claims against federal agencies and officials under the Administrative Procedure Act, or the APA, and the Supreme Court has repeatedly noted that there is a strong presumption against extra record discovery in an APA suit. Although there are certain exceptions to this rule, the states make no attempt to invoke any in their brief, nor could they, as the defendants have not yet had the opportunity to produce an administrative record for any claims that would survive a motion to dismiss. The court should decline their request for expedited discovery on this basis alone. And they go on for approximately 27 pages, talking about how they are allowed to discuss this stuff with social media companies. And social media companies are acting on their own volition here. They've got terms of service in place to stop people from saying things that are, in their eyes, considered misinformation. The problem is that discovery was granted. Before this court is a motion for expedited preliminary injunction-related discovery filed by the states of Missouri and Louisiana. Background. We're going to go through this. This is the judge. On May 5th, 2022, plaintiff states filed a complaint against government defendants. In the complaint, plaintiff states allege that government defendants have colluded with and or coerced social media companies to suppress disfavored speakers, viewpoints, and content on social media platforms by labeling the content disinformation, misinformation, or malinformation. Plaintiff states allege the suppression of disfavored speakers, viewpoints, and contents constitutes government action and therefore violates the state's freedom of speech in violation of the First Amendment to the United States Constitution. The complaint further alleged plaintiff states have created a disinformation governance board, which was disbanded, as we know, within the Department of Homeland Security, which is intended to be used and will be used to induce label pressure and pressure the censorship of disfavored content. In the complaint, plaintiff states set forth examples of suppression, which include the Hunter Biden laptop story, speech about the lab leak theory of COVID-19, speech about the efficacy of masks and COVID-19 lockdowns, and speech about election integrity and the security of voting by mail. Additionally, the complaint sets forth actions by specific government defendants that have been taken to suppress speech. They allege free speech is the bedrock of American liberty and government defendants are in violation of the First Amendment to the Constitution in attempting to suppress free speech by labeling the speech as misinformation. There are four counts in the first complaint. Then they file a motion for a preliminary injunction. The defendants don't want that to happen at all. And here the judge rules. And he goes through and he discusses that there's a traceability issue. There is a potential injury in fact. He goes over redressability, how, you know, important it is that it's very rare that something like this is granted. I know that people say, no, this happens all the time. It doesn't. Why he can actually rule on this now. He goes through case law to discuss it. He goes through expedited discovery. He says here, expedited discovery is not the norm. Courts only allow it in limited circumstances. Because I had people telling me everywhere, well, this is just a normal thing. It's not. Courts have allowed expedited discovery when there's some showing of irreparable harm or when there's a risk that evidence will be lost or destroyed. The factors used by good cause typically exist where the need for expedited discovery outweighs the prejudice to the responding party, because the responding party has to quickly, on an expedited timeline, get everything together and respond to the discovery requests. The judge ultimately rules at the end of the day, in accordance with the terms of conditions set forth herein, plaintiff state's motion for expedited preliminary injunction-related discovery is granted. And when that is granted, the government literally says to itself, oh, shit. This was the shot heard around the world. And of course, we move on through 11 pages of you know, citation and a table of authorities. And the defendants, the government, says memorandum in support of defendant's motion to dismiss. They file their motion to dismiss, or they file and they say, you know what, this is all nonsense. You guys can't do this. This is terrible. This might be out of order. For years, social media companies have taken independent steps to slow the spread of content they find misleading or harmful, not only here in the United States, I don't want that, but across the globe. Long before this administration took office, these companies have been adopting strategies to limit the spread of such content, often called misinformation, on their platforms. So what they're trying to say is, it's not us, guys. It's the government that's doing this. It's not us. I mean, it's the social media companies. It's not the government. It's the social media companies. They have their own standards here that they're following. And just because we're talking to them doesn't matter. And again, they push this issue of whether or not the states even have the right to sue them for this at all. And they say the states haven't sufficiently alleged that the asserted injuries stemming from the actions of the identified social media companies. You see, they even use propaganda inside of their legal filings. They say the companies independently chose to combat misinformation years ago, before this administration even took office. It was years and years ago, guys. They independently chose. And it also started happening before the defendants at issue made any public comments saying, if you don't do this, we will do this. Because Jen Psaki in particular would stand at her bully pulpit threatening social media companies in public in front of everybody that if they didn't act, there would be consequences. They say that the injunction would be sweeping and unprecedented and would operate as a gag order on federal officials, forcing the social media companies to abandon their policies against misinformation, which after all are embodied in the terms of service to which users of those companies' platforms have contractually agreed. Except the problem is, as we learned throughout discovery, the government was responsible for forcing them to craft their terms and conditions the way they wanted them to be crafted. And the Fifth Circuit addresses that directly when we get to the appeal. It is this case, I'm telling you, I know it might be boring legalese, but if you can understand the history of the docket in this case and how this unfolded, you will be light years more informed than all of your friends, and you'll be able to intelligently discuss how the government is weaponized against its citizens in favor of a state-approved narrative. Next, discovery's granted, as we discussed. They start producing discovery. And of course, the government pushes back. This is filed in August of 2022. They file a joint statement on discovery disputes. the plaintiff states want things, the government doesn't want to provide them. So they're arguing back and forth. On July 19th, 2022, pursuant to the court's order, the plaintiff served interrogatories or written question lists to the government defendants, along with document requests, seeking the identity of federal officials who have been and are communicating with social media platforms about disinformation and any censorship or suppression of speech on social media, including the nature and the content. They also served third-party subpoenas on five major social media platforms: Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and LinkedIn. The government defendants provided objections and responses to the plaintiff state's discovery requests and began a rolling production of documents that was completed on August 26th. So less than a month. The parties met and conferred on multiple occasions in an attempt to resolve their disputes. They narrowed them significantly, but many still remained unresolved, where the plaintiffs are saying, government, give us this stuff. We need this stuff. This is what we need. You're required to provide it. And the government says, go scratch. We're not giving you anything. Here is what was at issue at this point. And again, this is the history of the case, just to understand the pushback and the way this judge, this badass judge, has handled this case so far. The Fifth Circuit will come in, and now the Supreme Court. Here we go. Whether the White House defendants, meaning the press secretary and Dr. Fauci as his in his capacity as the chief medical advisor to the president, should be compelled to respond to interrogatories. Whether the defendants should be required in response to the interrogatories to identify federal officials and agencies whom they know of outside of their own agencies who have been or are engaged in communications about this stuff. They want to know who in the government is talking to these social media companies. And if the government knows of people, like if somebody in HHS knows of somebody in the White House who's talking to social media companies, the government's saying, we're not telling you who those people are, and they don't have a responsibility to tell you. And then the plaintiffs, Missouri and Louisiana, are saying, yeah, well, we want you to tell us this. We need to know. Whether Health and Human Services and Dr. Fauci, in his capacity as the director of NIAID, should be required to provide complete responses to document requests and questions. Whether the plaintiff should be allowed leave of court to file a Second Amendment complaint, adding defendants newly identified, whose identities have been revealed during discovery, and obtain similar expedited discovery from them. So they get this bulk of data, which is nothing in the grand scheme, because the government hid things, which we'll find out in a few minutes. They look at this data and they say, holy crap, look at all these other people involved in this nonsense that we really need in here. We need to amend our complaint to include those people so that we can also use this order on expedited discovery to get information from them, because we didn't even realize they existed. As an example, the Hunter Biden laptop story, I'm going to save it. It's coming. Hold on. Under the First Amendment, the federal government should have no role in policing private speech or picking winners and losers in the marketplace of ideas. But that's what the federal officials are doing on a massive scale, a scale whose full scope and impact is yet to be determined. Secretary Mayorkas of the DHS commented that the federal government's efforts to police private speech on social media are occurring across the federal enterprise. It turns out the statement is true on a scale beyond what plaintiffs could have ever anticipated. The limited discovery produced so far provides a tantalizing snapshot into a massive, sprawling federal censorship enterprise, which includes dozens of federal officials across at least 11 federal agencies and components identified so far, who communicate with social media platforms about misinformation, disinformation, and the suppression of private speech on social media, all with the intent and effect of pressuring social media platforms to censor and suppress private speech that federal officials disfavor. The discovery provided so far demonstrates that this censorship enterprise is extremely broad. Listen, including officials in the White House, HHS, DHS, CISA, the CDC, NIAID, and the Office of the Surgeon General, and evidently other agencies as well, like the Census Bureau, the FDA, the FBI, the State Department, the Treasury Department, and the U.S. Election Assistance Commission. And it rises to the highest levels of the U.S. government, including numerous White House officials. More discovery is needed to uncover the full scope of this censorship enterprise and thus allow plaintiffs the opportunity to achieve fully effective injunction relief. Meaning, when we started this thing, we didn't realize that there were agencies far outside the scope we originally identified that also need to be included in this temporary injunction and in the case for us to even be able to begin to dismantle what this government is doing to its citizens, irreparably harming their First Amendment rights. They say here that the plaintiffs didn't know. We didn't know that these White House officials were involved, and they turned out to be some of the worst. Now, the government is basically saying, we're not giving you this stuff. 45 officials were initially identified by the government who communicate at the agencies that they talked about originally in the complaint. But their document production revealed that officials at the Census Bureau were involved in censorship. The Census Bureau. And they got a good bulk. They go into it in detail here. All of these filings will be linked below. They have emails where the government is basically accusing Facebook of murder for allowing vaccine hesitancy to be on the platform. So this filing goes on for 67 pages. It is chock full of information. Discovery received so far indicates that a veritable army of federal bureaucrats are involved in censorship activities across the federal enterprise. 32 federal officials were identified by Facebook outside of the 45 that were identified by the government. Now, this is why I say this is really important, okay? And everybody says, like, even if there is a temporary injunction, why is that going to matter? Because this is why. The temporary injunction to stop social media companies from communicating with social media platforms in regards to censorship of Americans based on misdis and malinformation, isn't the that will stop it while the case goes through and is decided. As that's happening, discovery is ongoing as it is right now. So these people are still, they're still information exchanging hands. The social media companies were subpoenaed and are producing documents. The federal government is obviously producing documents. If the federal government leaves something out, like we will see shortly, and if the federal government leaves something out, but the social media companies provide it by accident or because they're just responding to discovery, then what happens? Then what happens is the states and the individual plaintiffs say, we got this from the federal government. We got this from Facebook, and there's all these people listed in here, but the government hasn't provided those people's stuff like they should have. So there's a blanket accountability built into discovery in this case, which you don't normally find. It's interesting. 9 people were identified by Twitter. 11 of them were identified by YouTube. So the government intentionally left out 30, 40 something in this very early stage of people. They left them out completely. And the only reason why anybody knew that they existed was because of the discovery provided by the social media companies. Now, this is particularly interesting because there was a massive fight in this case surrounding this when it came to Elvis Chan, whose name we would never know if it hadn't have been for Facebook. Thank you, Facebook. Facebook is the one who outed Elvis Chan and made it possible for the deposition of him to happen in this case. He perjured himself in that deposition several times. And that's addressed here too. It's been glorious. And I get giddy because when the courts work as they should, which is what is happening in this case. And the government is so brazenly flaunting its willpower, over trampling over your rights as Americans. It is a glorious thing to see the slug get the salt. That's what's happening. So that's filed. And then this was an interesting controversy I wanted to highlight for you as well. So Jen Psaki was press secretary. She goes up and she stands there during COVID and she says, if these social media companies don't listen to us, we are going to take action against them, in plain English. So when this lawsuit comes up, Missouri and Louisiana say, we need to talk to Karine Jean-Pierre to see what she knows. She now inhibits the office of the press secretary. Clearly, she's got responsive documents about why press secretary was using the bully pulpit to threaten social media companies in this way, just brazenly threatening them. Surely, there's information, documents, emails in the White House press office. But Karine Jean-Pierre comes back and she says, actually, guys, I have no information at all. I have no idea. I wasn't here. I don't know why this happened. Now, look, that's something these government agencies do all the time. They've done it in this case. In this case alone, they've swapped out 30-something people because it's very easy for them to come back after that because the office is being sued, not the person in their individual capacity. It's very easy for them to come back and pull a Karine Jean-Pierre and be like, I have no idea. I'm new here. It's the leftist fry. So that's why they do it. So Karine Jean-Pierre comes back and she says, I don't know anything. So sorry. Don't know anything about this. My bad. So sad. And they object to a whole bunch of different things that they don't want to have to answer. They say Karine Jean-Pierre knows nothing and we don't want to have to answer any of this. They also object stringently. Keep that in mind, the Karine Jean-Pierre thing. Keep it at the front of your mind. This is an email from John Sauer to the FBI and the DOJ, where they say, this is counsel for Missouri v. Biden. He says, as a follow-up note to my request for FBI communications with social media companies about misdis and malinformation and censorship and suppression of speech on social media, the FBI has now made a public statement in response to Mark Zuckerberg indicating that a significant volume of such communication exists. This is in regards to the Hunter Biden laptop. They came out. Meta came out and made a statement to the effect of, well, the government told us the Hunter Biden laptop was Russian disinformation. And they're doing that. Let me tell you something. The social media, that wasn't an accident that Mark Zuckerberg said that. Mark Zuckerberg is fighting for Section 230 protection for Facebook, which if it were to go away, would render the platform basically useless to him. Understand this. Everybody always argues with me that they want to censor us. The social media companies want to censor us. Yeah, I'm sure they do to some extent. But within the discovery that's available publicly in this case, you will see if you take the time to read it, that the social media platforms are constantly fighting back against the censorship demands of the federal government, saying that's really not against our terms. In many cases, Facebook said that would actually be counterintuitive and harmful. But they do it anyway. Because the government is threatening that if they don't, they will get it. They will get it. So they write, the attorney for this case writes to the government and says, hey, Mark Zuckerberg just basically said something publicly that indicates that you guys have a whole group of people working with him that you have not informed us of. Listen to how the government responds. Listen. We first want to note that we looked into the Mark Zuckerberg interview you referenced, and we don't think you accurately characterized his comments. Zuckerberg simply told Rogan, the background here is that the FBI came to us, some folks on our team, and was like, hey, Just so you know, you should be on high alert. We thought there was a lot of Russian propaganda in the 2016 election. We have it on notice that basically there's about to be some kind of dump that's similar to that. Listen, despite what your email insinuates, it doesn't appear Zuckerberg ever told Rogan that the FBI flagged the Hunter Biden story in particular. Nor did Zuckerberg ever appear to suggest that the FBI commanded Facebook to do anything, or again, as your email insinuates, target only comments beneficial to any one political group. Furthermore, Zuckerberg's comment and the FBI follow-up comment you reference reveal information that has been public for nearly 2 years. Lie, obfuscate, propagandize, the DOJ, this is our government, the government that's supposed to be working for us. This is our government. And another email. This is an email here that was discovered in Discovery. This is an email from the CDC to YouTube. This struck me in the middle of this. The YouTube policy team is requesting evidence-based input on the claims below. In the past, the CDC has reviewed COVID information claims and commented true or false plus any additional context needed. This is on abortion. Here's one on COVID-19. I just want you to, knowing what we all know and what we knew back then, somebody from the CDC reaches out to Facebook and says, here are responses to the claims below. Claims that CDC vaccine or COVID-19 vaccines are ineffective for children aged 6 months to 4 years are false, and belief in such claims could lead to back vaccine hesitancy. We know these COVID-19 vaccines are not effective at all. They knew these COVID vaccines were not effective at all. So you tell me where the misdis and malinformation is coming from. Is it coming from the CDC talking to Facebook, giving them information that's false so that they can censor American speech under threat? Or is it the people that said that this is nonsense? So there's a whole string of emails here. Thanks so much again for your help debunking claims about COVID vaccines in children. We're never going to finish this today. Never in a million years. So the judge steps in on September 6th of 2022. And he says, well, you know what? I see all these discovery discrepancies that are going on. I see them all. And I'm going to rule on this now, including the Jen Psaki. He looks at all these claims that we need to file a second amended complaint. We need greater discovery. And the judge says, I'm going to grant this and I'm going to allow this for you. And the judge grants and denies the motion in part. He says, it is ordered that discovery issues contained in the joint statement of discovery disputes is granted and denied in part as set forth herein. And anytime you see denied in part, you're like, ugh. But he granted the motion. I have to figure out where he denied it. I don't remember, but it was nothing serious. It was nothing serious because it never is because this judge is badass. This judge is so good. He is so good, guys. So good. And then the real fire happens. We get an amended complaint and they add some plaintiffs. They add Dr. Bhattacharya. They add Jill Hines, they add Jim Hoft, they add Dr. Cariotti, and they add Dr. Kulldorff. They file that amended complaint and they add individual plaintiffs outside of the states, which changes the ballgame completely. Because in the standing argument that they had, Even if, for example, they add these plaintiffs, let's pretend, which did not happen, that the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals and this judge say, you know what, you don't have standing. If these individual plaintiffs are on the suit, guess what? The standing argument, even if it's ruled against, they don't have to start over. Missouri and Louisiana can continue. These plaintiffs can continue. Everything goes on. There are some absolutely brilliant attorneys on this case. Just brilliant. It made me so upset when Sauer was in the weaponization committee hearing as a witness, and they let him speak for 3 minutes. Well, no offense, Matt Taibbi and Schellenberger. I think it was those two. And one other chick from Breitbart was there. Like, let this man speak. He's a genius. His arguing skills are absolutely phenomenal. I've never seen anyone with the recall that this attorney has. He didn't need a sheet of paper in front of him. He recalled page numbers, citations. Just a genius attorney. Genius. So, time goes on. It's 9:15 already. How am I ever going to do this? And there's discovery problems. Witness depositions. The plaintiffs come in, the states and the individual defendants. They come in and they say, you know what? We've got all this information and written interrogatories just ain't going to cut it. We need to take depositions. 10 key officials we want to depose. Based on continued disclosures and discovery and elsewhere, it's become clear that the federal censorship enterprise is enormous and far-reaching. Plaintiff's second amended complaint names 67 defendants, spanning 11 federal agencies and sub-agencies, and 570 paragraphs of detailed allegations about federal officials' involvement in procuring censorship of private speech. That's what they were willingly giving them, guys. Understand. So they say, we need to talk to these people in person. We need to actually have a conversation with them. It also shows that a lot of what happened verbally, not in writing. And the only way to find that information would be to actually sit these people down and ask them questions about what they said. So they ask. They want to depose Fauci, Flaherty, Slavitt, Psaki, Chan, Easterly, Lauren Pretentis from CISA, Surgeon General Vivek Murthy, Carol Crawford from the CDC's media branch, and Daniel Kimmage from the State Department. Two of these, Slavitt and Psaki, are former federal officials. The rest are current federal officials. And then they go through why they want to depose all these people in detail. Again, you really should read this stuff because it's very, very, very illuminating. I'm just giving you a roundabout. And the Psaki and Slavitt depositions are interesting because they left. Now, remember what I told you. John Pierre says, I know nothing. The press office says, we know nothing. Well, the only person left who has that knowledge is who? Jen Psaki. Jen Psaki herself, who is now a private citizen. We need to depose Jen Psaki. We need to get her in court. We need to get her in under oath. And we need to ask her who told her around the water cooler that she should go out there and threaten these social media companies. And the judge comes back. And he goes through the applicable law. And he talks about the extraordinary circumstance limitation. And at the end of the day, after going through all of this in a very detailed manner, over 28 pages, citing the fact set that's been introduced into the record so far. Read it. Read it, guys. I can't read the whole thing to you on here. But he goes into detail all the things that Fauci did that warrant deposition. He goes through every single one of them. He goes through why they should be deposed, what they've done so far that's been discovered, and how disgusting it is. It is ordered that Anthony Fauci cooperate, the judge says. It is ordered that Rob Flaherty cooperate. Slavitt. It is ordered that Slavitt cooperate. This is on October 21st, 2022. You see what's happening here? Saki. This is what she said about the disinformation dozen. There's a bunch of different statements from Saki. She stated on May 5th, 2021, the major platforms have a responsibility related to the health and safety of all Americans to stop amplifying untrustworthy content, disinformation, and misinformation, especially related to COVID-19 vaccinations and elections. And then she said, the administration's in regular touch with social media platforms and the engagements happen between members of our senior staff and members of our COVID-19 team. She also spoke of the disinformation dozen, in quotes, and stated all 12 of them remain active on Facebook, despite some even being banned on other platforms, including Facebook, ones that Facebook owns. They need to move quickly to remove harmful, violative posts. Posts that will be within their policies for removal often remain up for days. That's too long. The information spreads too quickly. Jen Psaki said, you shouldn't be banned from one platform and not others. It's not her decision. She also demanded robust strategies for social media companies to enforce censorship of harmful posts and stated that President Biden was concerned about social media platforms and thought they should be, quote, held accountable for the harms. How do you hold accountable a social media company for the, quote, harms if you're not coercing or threatening them? Is that not? At the end of the day, it is ordered that Jen Psaki cooperate in the plaintiff's request to depose her. Elvis Chan, it is ordered that Elvis Chan cooperate. It is ordered that Jen Easterly cooperate. It is ordered that Laura Pretentis cooperate. It is ordered that Vivek Murthy cooperate. It is ordered that Carol Crawford cooperate. Judge Terry Doughty. It is ordered that Kimmage cooperate. It is ordered that to the extent that the plaintiffs move to depose the following parties, that request is granted. Judge Terry Doughty put down the gauntlet on the government with this order for deposition of these department heads. Unheard of. The government says, eek. Eek! Goes to the Fifth Circuit. Appeals. The Fifth Circuit comes back and says, you know, we can see there's a need for this, but let's try and find some folks lesser than below these people because they're department heads, and to take them out of their roles as leads of government bureaucracies for a day or two or three would be completely outside of the scope of the norm and would cause undue harm. So before we rule on all of this that they're asking us to rule on, Judge Doughty, please just reevaluate this with your plaintiffs and see if you can come up with some other folks that can be deposed in this temporary injunction. And they did that. Fauci remained. Chan remained. Easterly was replaced by someone else at CISA. The Surgeon General Vivek Murthy was replaced by Waldo. Where's Waldo? There were some substitutions. Arrow in the chat is asking where the paperwork is. Arrow, as soon as this live stream is over, all of these links will be below in the show notes so you can look at them. And those depositions happened. Oh, did they happen? And they were recorded. And the defendants come in and say, we need a protective order on all of these depositions so that nobody can see them. Nobody can see them. Because we're getting threats. There's personal information in here. And these people are getting threatened by the crazy alt-right conspiracy theorists. So they motion the court to keep all of it under seal and not let the depositions out. And of course, Missouri and the other plaintiffs in Louisiana come in and say, actually, no, I don't think so. Defendant's belated motion for a protective order as to the deposition scheduled to commence the next day is unsupported by evidence and ignores the enormous public interest in disclosure and access in this case, an interest deeply rooted in fundamental First Amendment values. Defendant's motion is meritless. But listen to this. In the aftermath of the court's order on depositions, defendants found plenty of time and resources to file a blitz of motions and briefs attacking those depositions in three different courts. It's true. They went to the Fifth Circuit. They went to Virginia to stop Jen Psaki from having to testify. That I actually did its own standalone video on where I read the transcript of that hearing. I'm just going to say this. At every turn so far, the government has gotten its butt whipped in this case. Everyone. And Wednesday's show will be from wherever we end today, and I'll speed through it because you need to get up to speed on this. I just want everybody to understand the how this case has gone so far, because it's not as just as simple as, oh, they filed a temporary injunction. There has been a lot of shenanigans and a lot of things that have happened in this case that are so important. So they filed all this stuff. And then the day before the depositions are supposed to start taking place, they file for a protective order. They say it's urgent. There's no evidence there's been any harassment. They filed no evidence there's been any harassment. They don't care about the public. They say the public's not really important. They give the factual background here. They say a campaign of scorched earth legal resistance ensued as defendants fought to block or restrict the depositions in three different courts. In rapid succession, they filed a motion to stay the depositions of Flaherty, Murthy, and Easterly in this court, a petition for writ of mandamus to block the depositions in the Fifth Circuit, a motion to stay those depositions in the Fifth Circuit, and a motion to reconsider the deposition of Elvis Chan in this court. And they joined with private counsel to file twin motions to quash the deposition of Psaki in the Eastern District of Virginia, like I said. Meanwhile, they stalled and delayed providing any available dates for any witnesses for almost a month after a week after the court's order, despite the request for dates. And now they're saying that we're on the eve of these depositions, that nobody should be able to see them. Well, the judge came in. The judge came in and said, you know what, guys? You're right. We'll redact their addresses. And that's it. We'll redact their addresses. And that's it. That's what he said. The court grants in part the federal defendant's request to redact certain personally identifiable information of the deposition transcripts, including those of law enforcement personnel. Insofar as the federal defendants move to redact personal information like personal addresses, telephone numbers, or email addresses, the motion's granted. Insofar as federal defendants move to redact the names of the deponent or names of other non-parties, including those of law enforcement personnel and other information, the motion's denied. The court has previously ruled on who will be deposed, and the public's interest in access to the information that a particular deponent is sharing far outweighs the federal defendant's privacy interests. Another smackdown on the government. Do you understand why I'm telling you? This case is different. This is not your ordinary case. This shouldn't be something we jump up and down and celebrate. This is how it's supposed to work. But we have been so jaded by bullshit, weak-ass judges who do not uphold the law and do not apply the law properly that this gem of a patriot judge in Louisiana is a hero. Then he ruled against Jen Psaki. He said, no, Jen Psaki. Your motion to quash your subpoena is denied. There's no one else who can give this information. Jen Psaki must be deposed. Sorry, not sorry. And that was an hour, folks. So we're done for today. hate it. But this is the first half of Missouri v. Biden. The second half of Missouri v. Biden will be on Wednesday. And it gets heated. I have some more. Hopefully this was riveting for you and you'll come back on Wednesday. As riveting as it is for me. Again, this is the most important civil liberties case in our lifetimes. It is set to go to the Supreme Court. That temporary injunction we spoke about in the very beginning, that the government granted expedited discovery to determine the outcome of, is sitting in front of the Supreme Court for argument this coming Monday. We will get, on Wednesday, we will work through the rest of this, the proposed findings of fact that were filed, how we got here to the temporary injunction being granted, the path that that took, when it went to the Fifth Circuit, what happened at the Fifth Circuit with reconsideration and everything else with CISA, how the temporary injunction was upheld by the Fifth Circuit of the United States of America, and why it is now sitting in front of the Supreme Court for decision. Make sure you tune in, and we will be back here on Wednesday.